But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The worldwide web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to The Wealth Show. I'm Natalia Varsnier and today I'm joined by Benjamin Reed Hurwitz, Regional Head of Research Development at ISS Market Intelligence. ISSMI does in-depth research into the model portfolio service sector and is the organisation behind the Pridham Report, which monitors sales and asset trends in the UK fund market. Ben, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to kick off with the MPS sector. So it's no surprise for most of our listeners that that has been a really growing market in the industry recently, with more and more providers entering the market. But how far do you think that can go?
So the picture remains bright for MPS. We've recently run our Q3 platform data, and MPS net sales are still very positive. And this is against a backdrop of relatively muted flows into investment funds. So it's definitely a leading channel. And for the foreseeable future, I think this will be the case. It's important, though, to look at the sources of growth. And I do think there have been two sources driving the net sales into MPS. One is naturally the net sales coming into the IFAs and the wealth managers using MPS. But just as importantly, there's also been a transition of existing assets and existing clients into MPS. And this has been another key source. And this is a source that won't necessarily last forever. And just to make it clear, what I'm talking about is in the data, what I can see is gross sales into MPS is a much higher share than MPS is of redemptions. And a part of this explanation is that sort of transferring of money to MPS, either with new clients going more into MPS than existing clients, or again, as existing clients switch. And this is the source that'll eventually even out. And in fact, that's what we see in older books of business that use older portfolio construction methods. For example, those advisors who built books of business with single strategy funds and constructed portfolios that way, many of those firms still exhibit an even split in single strategy funds between redemptions and gross sales. And therefore, the only net sales being generated is the net sales from the firm.
And do you think moving forwards, MPS is going to continue to dominate sales in the UK market?
Where we're watching most closely and what I watch most closely now with MPS is actually the share of gross sales it's bringing in, to see if that changes. Because as I said, eventually the net sales from the traditional end, so it'll be more about can that increase? And then are the firms that are adopting MPS, are they growing fastest? On the gross sales question, what we have seen is a bit of a tapering out. There's still growth. There still does to be a slight upward trajectory, but it's not what we've seen in the past. And I think at this point, there's probably hardly an advisor out there who hasn't at least considered whether MPS is right for them. So I think we're going to need to see a catalyst for a lot of advisors and advisory firms to reconsider their usage of MPS. And I just don't currently see that catalyst on the map. But again, to have another wave of adoption, I think we will need a catalyst.
And what do you think that catalyst would look like?
Well, often these catalysts come in the form of regulation, but I would also say technology. I mean, I think the growth of MPS is tied both to the development of centralized investment propositions, which is partly obviously a regulatory response, but also the growth of platforms and the greater use of platforms and the functionality built into the platforms. I mean, some platforms out there are basically built around the MPS. And if those evolve, if those generate a better user experience, that could easily be a catalyst. And then, of course, the third catalyst is obviously consolidation. If those consolidating favor MPS as a centralized investment proposition, and we have another large wave of consolidation, that could be a big mover for MPS overall.
And I think that kind of leads into my next question is, I was reading a statistic by DeFacto that said there was around 120 MPS providers in the market out there. Is that too many?
I don't know if it's too many, but I do think what we're going to see in the MPS market, and we are seeing elements of already, is it's going to grow up in front of our eyes. And I do think part of that growing up process will lead to consolidation. There certainly are MPS programs that haven't yet reached scale, and they may determine the more valuable option is to, in fact, consolidate. So I do expect consolidation will be on the table, but I think there is still a very rich market. The key is, can you differentiate yourself? And in a market with 100 plus, which is also what we see, that becomes quite difficult.
No, that makes sense. And I think in the recent ISSMI report about the MPS space, it kind of revealed that the race at the bottom was still there, but the focus had changed to more blended solution that was demanded by advisors. Why do you think there's been kind of that shift and such a high demand for blended products?
Well, I think I'd first like to start with sort of the race to the bottom, because it does ultimately explain a lot of the dynamics we're seeing. So we love to talk about fund flows. This is pretty much what all of us investment fund researchers talk about. What we're talking about is the movement of money from clients like myself and yourself into investment funds. So let's think of that as being the river. We're on one side as the client, the asset manager's on the other. But upstream from the asset manager is now these portfolio solution groups. This is talking about model portfolios and unitized multi-assets. And sort of upstream from them is sort of the wealth management groups. So the money runs down from the client to the asset manager, but it has these other levels. And these other levels, though, the fact they've sort of consolidated themselves or they're consolidating flows have the power now to divert or dam that river, which has sort of put them in a position of power. I mean, at ISSMI, we believe the future, likely today, power sort of resonates out from who's closest to the clients. It's a very client-centric environment. So they've been put in a position of power. They've used that really for two facets. One is pricing. And again, the pricing in related to controlling cost to client. Because it both partly protects their revenue stream, because ultimately they're part of the cost of the client. But again, it's also about sort of making sure the client has that sort of value-driven solution. So they're using their pricing power. It's flowing through the chain. And that's why MPS providers themselves have faced sort of pricing pressure, but then asset managers most intensely, because they're at the bottom of the chain. And I think where the blended portfolio comes into is it is about sort of that cost-controlled or cost-conscious portfolio. These sort of aggregators of flows, these asset allocators, they have become very discerning about value. And there just is a broader understanding that benchmark exposure is important, which we obviously see driven through more passives. But then there is still high demand for those alpha generating solutions, for that differentiation, for that outcome driven approach. It's just best done sort of in this blend.
Okay. And in the report, it was also mentioning the rise in popularity of absolute return strategies. Where do they fit within that kind of cost narrative?
Yeah, so that's the thing about the blend. You'd think in some ways it portends sort of a negativity around sort of active flows. And again, the money we've seen sort of flow out of active and into passive, that's also been a transition. Like when it comes to the MPS channel, we see flows, as in gross sales, split about 50-50 active-passive. But that's moving from a book of business that was likely closer to 75-25 in favor of active. So it's that transition that's led to sort of the outflows. But the overall picture for active is still very positive. In absolute return, what it's picking up on is the biggest theme of the year when it comes to purely investment strategy is diversification. So again, there is demand for benchmark exposure. People do want that U.S. exposure, but equally there are concerns about sort of the global market weight equity position being too heavily concentrated in some areas. So that's why diversification is high on the agenda. Absolute return can provide that. Absolute return is also very outcome-oriented, and there's a lot more drive to build portfolios to deliver a client outcome opposed to being so return-focused. So it really fits the narrative, but I'd say it's picking up a trend that I really see, you know, providing blossoms across the active universe, because diversification is obviously something active management can pick up on quite well.
And I wanted to follow up on one of the points you're mentioning when we're talking about catalysts around platforms. I think there's been, I mean, I've heard quite a few complaints about platforms not being able to cater ETFs or private assets. Do you think poor platform technology is detrimental to MPS as like a holistic investment solution?
I think there are limitations to what's sort of possible in the UK environment because of the platform situation. I mean, there's a proliferation of platforms, but that's also positive. I would caution, though, about seeing it too negatively, because it is this sort of competitive platform space that really helped MPS thrive. I mean, now I agree, we're seeing the industry grow up. We're seeing where the challenges are. We're seeing where the evolution needs to be. So I think you're right. We do need more solutions today. I do expect more platforms are going to discover ways to include new products. But I do think we're right now at a bit of an impasse in some places. But again, I think the beneficial thing is there are so many platforms. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of room for innovation. But I think there is demand for new vehicles as well.
No, that makes sense. And then, so I know that the MPS market is such like kind of a big market, but I've kind of heard some people say that there's been a growing demand also of kind of multi-asset products as well. What's kind of your view on that, and where does that fit?
So unitized multi-asset has certainly gotten a boost since CGT has become more important to investors. It does have tax efficiency. One of the most interesting things, because it relates to a few of your earlier questions, is a number of MPS programs in sort of growing up, in understanding their limitations, in needing to simplify, have in fact unitized part of their program, as in they're building these unitized fund-to-fund blocks that provide clients with this CGT coverage, as well as sort of making trading across this diverse sort of platform market easier. And it's also within these building blocks that they can use ETFs more easily, for example, because these building blocks have sort of a different trading system and platform behind them than the retail platform. So it's really all coming together and blending. But yes, since CGT became on everyone's radar, that is where we saw sort of a turn back and some greater net sales into unitized multi-asset.
And so we've talked a lot about MPS. I wanted to kind of turn towards more the Pridham report and the research that it does around the UK fund market. What have you seen as like the biggest trends in the UK fund market this year, or kind of more recently?
Well, I think some of it does tie back to what I've said. I mean, I think the most important trend, first of all, is net sales. And the fact it's been muted. Because a lot of the pressures I've talked about, it's this muted net sales environment. It's in fact, if we go back to the river, that conditions are dry, that there's a lot of scarcity, that pricing competition is so intense. I mean, pricing competition, and I'd really say sort of value narratives and the importance of having a value narrative. That's almost one of the number one things as a Pridham author I talk to when I talk of heads of sales. I'm sort of in a privileged position to have those conversations. So that's become really important. But that's also that sort of river, that flow, who has the power to dam partnerships. One of the other biggest themes is partnerships and really about asset managers. And I don't want to make it sound like people on the river are sort of necessarily fully competing with each other and that it's conflict. Because in fact, it's leading to a lot of partnerships. And the partnerships have benefits both ways. One is creating sort of customized solutions where the asset manager works with the distribution group or model portfolio provider for something customized. Other things we've seen, though, is asset managers working with said groups to sort of fund a new fund launch. And it's actually a great source of flows. So again, partnerships is a big thing. Last thing, if we're talking funds, as I said earlier, diversification to me is sort of the word of the year. A lot of concern about the overweight and over concentration of some indices. So everyone's considering sources diversification. But the great thing is it doesn't mean one thing. So we've seen many, many different sort of fund managers be able to pick up on that theme and have success.
And I know that most of the like the recent Pridham reports were kind of showing a lot of pressures on active managers with new products coming into the space, mainly on like kind of the index passive side. What do you think like pressures around for active managers going to continue moving forward, and what risks are there like in the UK fund market?
I think pressure will certainly continue. I think the question is certainly for each asset manager, it is how much is at risk, as in how much money do they currently have? Because there is this transition. I talked about how I believe where assets sit in terms of the active-passive splits, that will still come down. If we look at MPS and some of the leading fund buyers today, they have a different weighting than where existing assets sit. So many of the other trends we talked about keep coming true, that will change. But that is sort of hiding the opportunity with an active. And that's what I mean. There is sort of a refashioning of active. There is new opportunities for value narratives to be put out there. I think the key, though, is managers need to be able to identify what value they provide to a portfolio. They need to have a strong story and be able to explain it well. And then they need to make sure they're talking to the right clients. Because again, there's a lot of active opportunity, but what that opportunity is differs widely by clients. Some clients use active quite heavily and broadly, some in a much more focused manner. So segmentation is important. But again, I see a great future for active, but it's really about who can win the value narrative. And that's connecting price to what's being delivered, and then obviously having the fund come through on performance.
But don't you see like kind of pressures coming from ETFs mainly? Because there's been such a wide discourse around ETFs, active ETFs coming into the market earlier this year. Doesn't that have a kind of pressure for active managers on how kind of to continue outperforming the market when you've got these new structured products coming in?
I think it's a great question. I think when we look at it, and this applies though, I think, to all fund managers. I think it's a very good point about ETFs in the delivery of solutions. I think the challenge for those managers that have focused largely on traditional fund structures is tomorrow's world may not be as fund-centric, or at least not how we've traditionally thought of funds. ETFs are already showing this. They've grown rapidly in the US, they're growing in Canada, they're growing in Europe, and surely there will be a point they start growing even more quickly in the UK. So as a fund manager, I think active or passive, you have to be really flexible on delivery, because there are solutions like direct indexing, separately managed accounts or SMAs that don't even involve a fund structure at all and are much more direct purchasing. And who knows what sort of blockchain will open up in those capabilities as well, or how platforms evolve. So I think if you want to position yourself for the future, you're correct in that they need to think flexibly. And I obviously do think fund managers, active managers in the UK do need to think about the ETF structure, how their strategies fit into that, how they will adapt to a world that might be more ETF heavy, because I do think that's a key consideration. We're seeing in the US a lot of that activity ramp up. And again, it may also create a new market though, because there may be a new market for those who are willing to use active ETFs, who may not have actually sort of been in active funds.
And there's been like, on the point of active ETFs, I feel like there's been a lot of kind of interest, but as well kind of frustrations around how to access them. Do you think kind of accessing and having being able to have those products within, let's say, MPSs, do you think that's going to increase over time? Is it, I mean, that was kind of linked to the platform question we had earlier, but.
Yes, I do think access to ETFs will increase over time. I think there's a lot of demand for it. And I think someone will rise up to the challenge to sort of meet that demand. And I think we're already seeing things occur to sort of drive towards that. I mean, one development is sort of the use of these building block funds. And it may be the case that if platforms do not sort of evolve quickly enough for, say, MPS providers and their demand for ETF, although some platforms can use ETFs, it's certainly not a situation across all. It's just with MPS, they like to distribute and have their program available across all platforms. So even one large platform not having the capability is a challenge. But this building block structure allows them to kind of use and adopt ETFs. So they may be able to get their ETF adoption up to speed prior to that challenge being solved. But I think if we're going back to sort of asset managers, fund managers, I mean, they need to be responsive to the demands of their clients. Again, I'll go back to the river. In many cases, they're at the end of the journey for the money. They need to be responsive to the rest of the value chain that flowed the money there. ETFs is just one example. But yes, I encourage a flexible thought. I like to say Play-Doh or Lego approach to product delivery, because you just have to have an open mind and really think about what's possible.
And then I had like a final question on the latest Pridham report that looks into Q3 sales. And it was showing how 41% of fund groups reported onshore net retail sales growth in Q3, which means more than half actually didn't report any sales growth. Why, like, could you just give a bit brief an explanation as why is that?
Yeah, so Q3 was a tougher quarter for fund groups. I mean, there are a few reasons. One, it appears investors went back to being quite hesitant. I mean, naturally, there is a boost to net sales during sort of the tax season and the changeover of ISA limits and such. So we saw what looked like a fairly positive second quarter, which was actually impressive because it was positive even with things like Liberation Day and a number of things that could have sort of thrown off investors. Q3, though, appears we went back to hesitancy. So again, I'll go back to there was less money out there to win. I'd say the second challenge is a fair amount of those net sales went to money market, went to short duration, went to fixed income. And those sectors actually tend to have a bit smaller of a competitor base. So again, it did sort of limit how many could win. We tend to find sort of the global equity category, some of the most competitive, because you find many managers who are not yet large in the UK. Those are often strategies they come in with because they have expertise abroad, either in the US or a more global market or Europe. And many of those categories struggled. Overall, equity struggled quite a bit. Mixed asset, unitized multi-asset was also sort of down. Still positive sales there, but sort of lower. There wasn't a lot of spaces to win, and I think that's really what explains it. But lastly, I'll go back to diversification, because many of the stories of those who won weren't necessarily short duration or fixed income. They were getting a message of diversification out in whichever asset class in this tough environment.
Okay, I think that's an interesting point to end it on. Ben, it was great to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to The Wealth Show. For any questions, please feel free to email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
But today is VE Day. The war is
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929. The Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.